This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
This advertisement feature is paid and presented by Go Türkiye. Türkiye is a golfer's paradise, and much of that is down to Belek on the country's southern Mediterranean coast. Courses here cut through lush pine forest, set on fast, sandy ground that's kept in immaculate condition all year round. And for those never quite ready to call it a day, Belek is also host to the first full 18-hole floodlit course in Europe. Local pro Dennis Sutmaz is lucky enough to call Belek her training ground.
There are more than 15 courses. You can play golf in winter and summer.
And once the round is done, long lunches replace scorecards and spas, hammams and slow afternoons take over.
When I'm not playing golf, I usually go to the beach, tan, go into the sea. You just feel like you're in another world.
Because in Belek, luxury isn't about excess. It's about time well spent. Plan your next detour at goturkiye.com today.
Hello, Greg Jenner here. I'm the host of You're Dead to Me, the BBC comedy show that takes history seriously. Every episode, I pair up a top historian with a fantastic comedian, and we have a lovely, funny, fascinating chat about a different subject from world history. And in this new series, we're beginning with an epic voyage through the story of Homer, the Iliad, and the Odyssey. And that's with Kyle Smith-Bino joining us. And then we'll be learning about Francis Galton and the racist, discredited pseudoscience of eugenics with Desiree Birch. We'll meet many medieval saints in their bone boxes with Rachel Parris. So, if that sounds like your sort of thing, listen to You're Dead to Me wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. Bye.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Earlier this year, former head teacher and Children's Commissioner Rachel D'Souza said she wanted the government to work ferociously to tackle school absences in England. The number of children missing school has apparently never been higher. With attendance closely linked to attainment, many are worried about a so-called lost post-pandemic generation. Are they right to worry? And what should we do about it? Step inside the briefing room and together we'll find out. First, let's get an idea of the scale of the problem. Earlier, the briefing room's Claire Bowes talked to the BBC's education editor, Branwyn Jeffries.
If you look at the most important part of pupil absence, which is persistence absence, so that is children who are missing at least 10% of school, that's around 7 days in each academic term. If you look at the autumn term in 2019, which was the last term before the pandemic hit, the persistent absence across England was 13.1%. By autumn 2022, that was 24.2%. So we are seeing the most troubling part of absence running at consistently twice the level it was before the pandemic. This is not a marginal shift. It's seismic.
And what have teachers been telling you about the impact of these absences, both on the school itself as well as those who are absent?
Coming out of the pandemic with this doubling in the rate of persistent absence, which is an amount of time missed that is going to have a very significant accumulative effect on a child's learning across an academic year. They're worried about a number of things. So one is that it is feeding into a widening of the disadvantage gap, which we're seeing in terms of educational attainment between the most disadvantaged pupils and the better off. And that is a gap that was narrowing pre-pandemic, and it is widening despite all the efforts to try and redress that. And obviously, if children aren't in school, it's harder to work with them to close that. But there are other things which schools are dealing with, which they see as part of this. So an increase in the number of young people experiencing problems with their mental health and well-being. At the most extreme end, that is reflected in a big rise in the number of referrals to specialist NHS services. But below that, schools are telling me that they are dealing with loss of confidence, with anxiety, with social anxiety of re-immersing into school. And above and beyond that, there are other complex issues, children with special educational needs and disabilities. perhaps some of those were undetected or had delayed diagnosis during the pandemic. And they are now feeding into a system which is already struggling to keep up with assessing and meeting their needs. And a profound shift in cultural norms. So school leaders, people who are running groups of schools around England, talk to me about a social contract, an assumption that going to school Monday to Friday is normal, has been broken for some families for quite different reasons. So for some families where there are white-collar workers able to do some of their work from home, there's been perhaps a slight shift in parental attitudes. Well, if you're not very well on a Friday, maybe you can be at home because I don't have to go out to work. But in the most disadvantaged communities, there's simply a connection with school, a connection with the importance of education that many school leaders feel has been broken. You told us it didn't matter if our children weren't in school, attending day in, day out for months on end. And now you're telling us that they have to be there. Well, we're just not buying it.
And what are the children telling you? You've spoken to lots in different situations. What are they telling you about their relationship with school?
I think for some children, and particularly for teenagers, there was something about the experience of going back into a big, noisy, bustling, sometimes quite tough environment of a secondary school that they found very difficult. Children who had some special educational needs, like autistic children or children who are ADHD, who'd actually quite liked home learning and the control that gave them over their environment, found that re-immersion difficult. Some had suffered disruption to their friendship groups and a sense of disconnection, and that socially reconnecting into social groups, and the feeling perhaps of fear of having fallen behind and feeling stupid in class, which can then become a self-fulfilling circle in which a child misses more and more of school.
Mm. And what about that noisy, bustling atmosphere? Has the behaviour of children changed post-pandemic? Have we seen any, is there any evidence of an impact there?
It's very hard to get empirical evidence around this, but I go into hundreds of schools every year. And anecdotally, there is strong evidence that many schools have been dealing with more behaviour issues coming out of the pandemic. So some of this is the readjustment of children into a very structured and socialised environment, re-entry into their friendship groups in real life, as opposed to being conducted online. And also a sense that children maybe have some delayed social and emotional development coming out of the pandemic.
And with schools back now, what's the impact on teachers and teaching with a class that's two-thirds full?
The difficulty for teachers is that they have still faced the expectations to keep everyone on track. There's a huge amount of tracking of children now in terms of their data and how they're performing. Big schools will look very carefully to try and identify who they think might be falling behind. And of course, we've seen interventions like the National Tutoring Programme, which has been part funded by the government and then part funded by schools to try and target efforts at children who are falling behind. But it is incredibly difficult to teach a class of 30 who are meant to be progressing at the same kind of speed through the same checkpoints of knowledge when some of them are missing a significant amount.
Bramwyn Jeffries. Now I want to understand a bit more about who is not turning up for school and dig into the numbers. Katie Bainan is a statistician at FFT Education Data Lab, the leading independent provider of education data for schools in the UK. Katie Bainan, we've got the overall picture from Bramwyn Jeffries, but let's dig a little deeper. What are the figures for overall absence in schools in 2022, and how do they compare with pre-pandemic?
At the minute, we're seeing levels of absence in primary school. They're about one and a half times what they were pre-pandemic. So pre-pandemic, on a typical day, we might have expected about 4% of children to be off. And now it's more like 6% this year. And at secondary school, a slightly bigger increase from pre-pandemic. Previously, it would have been about 5.5% of pupils off on a typical day. And now it's about 9% of pupils.
Right. Okay. Which is
a significant increase. Let's talk about how these absences are calculated and then a little bit more about who it is we're actually talking about, what these increases consist of. So firstly, how are absences actually calculated?
Pupils, when they come into school, their teacher will take a register and they'll take one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And any pupils who are not that registration session will be marked off as absent. Anyone who is there will be marked as present. And then once the pupil's been marked absent, the school will then chase up the reason for that absence. So it might be because they're off sick, or it might be a reason that perhaps yet to be determined. And then the school will change the register mark from just absent to a reason code that lets the school know how many pupils are off.
Are we talking about some students, when we talk about the increase that you've given a figure to, missing a lot more of school, or many students missing a bit more of school than they used to?
It's actually a mixture of both. At primary school, broadly, it's everyone missing a little bit more, although there is an increase in pupils who've missed a lot. But of the two, it's more all pupils missing a little bit more. At secondary school, all pupils are missing a little bit more, but we've seen a bigger increase in pupils missing lots and lots of school.
Okay, now let's talk about what missing lots and lots of school actually means. Persistent absence. What would we describe as persistent absence? What do you have to do to qualify as a persistent absentee?
So persistent absence actually has a specific and clear meaning, and it is any pupil who's missed more than 10% of school throughout the year. Typically is about 4 weeks for a pupil who is enrolled for the full year. And it doesn't matter whether the pupil missed that 4 weeks all in one go because they were off sick with an ear infection or something, or if they missed one day a week of school for 20 weeks, both of those pupils would be classed as persistent absentees.
Let's talk a bit more about who the children are that who are affected by this. Let's say difference between girls and boys, difference between types of schools and age groups.
Definitely more secondary than primary. And the older pupils are in secondary school, the more frequently they are persistently absent, the more pupils are persistently absent. In terms of boys and girls, there's not actually a massive difference. The pupils who are really impacted by persistent absence, the ones that are most likely to be persistently absent, tend to be pupils who are on free school meals or pupils who have got an education, health and care plan.
What is an education, health and care plan?
Pupils who are identified as having a special educational need, perhaps because they have got a diagnosis of autism, is something which is arranged with the local authority to provide extra support in school.
For those pupils with special needs?
Exactly, yeah.
We've talked about who are most likely to be persistent absentees. Is it actually every kind of child who now seems to belong to the category of people who are slightly less likely to attend than they used to be?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It seems to have had an impact on everybody's attendance, essentially.
Katie, in addition to what you've just told us, what has surprised you most about the figures that you've gathered?
I think for me, the biggest surprise is that we've not seen more of a return to normal this year. Because last year, I think when we were looking at all of the figures, we were looking at the weekly absences and we had Omicron emerge and cause, you know, huge levels of sickness in schools over the winter and then again in the summer. And I think perhaps naively, I expected that we would see a big chunk of that absence just not happen this year. But actually, although absence has come down slightly from last year, it's not really a massive difference. It's something like 1 percentage point lower this year than last year. And so it seems like we are seeing something not necessarily directly related to COVID.
Katie Bainan, those are the stats. Let's talk now about what they mean for this generation of school children and think about what we can do to turn things round. Sam Friedman is a senior fellow at the Institute for Government, and Emily Hunt is Associate Director Social Mobility and Vulnerable Learners at the Education Policy Institute. Emily Hunt, can you tell us why attendance is so important?
Attendance is important for several reasons. One of those reasons is around children being in school and learning, so children can achieve their academic potential, and that matters for later life outcomes. It's important so children and young people can meet with their peers for their social and emotional development and not become isolated at home. It's also important from a safeguarding perspective in ensuring children and young people are in a safe space and not at risk of getting involved in crime and becoming exploited.
So can we unpack those a little? To start with the first one, can we say that there is a fairly direct link between attainment and presence in school?
We can. So the evidence is clear on that. If you are present in school, you're much more likely to achieve well right across education phases. If you are absent, you're at a higher risk of school dropout. You're also more at risk of poor social and emotional skills as a result of being isolated. And there's some interesting evidence coming out of researchers at Strathclyde University looking at later life outcomes from being absent. And what they're finding is that if you're absent for 5 more days than the average, you are then more likely to be not economically active by age 42. The increased risk is something like 4%. So it can actually impact not just on school age attainment, but also your later life outcomes.
Emily, to talk about your second area, which is what is happening to children who are not in school. What do we know about that?
Part of the problem is that we don't have very good data on what happens when children are not in school. Some of those children will be home educated. And I think the DfE estimates for the size of that
Department for Education.
That's right. Are around 80,000 to 100,000. We're hearing reports from councils about children are increasingly struggling with their mental health. And at the more extreme end, some of those children are actually unable to leave home. There are concerns around children getting involved in crime and other safeguarding issues. And I think it's really welcome that the Department for Education is putting out a call for evidence on those children who are missing from education. So they're not on a school roll, they're not being home educated, to really just try and understand who are those children, how many of them are there, and what best practice looks like.
Are you saying there are some kids, actually, we are in danger of losing any kind of contact with altogether?
Indeed, there are some children for whom we actually just do not know where they are or what they're doing.
Sam, do absences that we're talking about, do they affect all groups of children equally?
No, they're much more likely to affect children from lower income backgrounds and children who are older. So if you look at year 10, which is the first year of GCSE, children who are sort of 14, 15 years old, about half of children who are from low-income backgrounds in that year were persistently absent from school in the autumn term.
Half.
So if you take the overall numbers, they sound bad, but if you really focus in on those groups who are most affected, it looks pretty dire.
Right. And how big an effect does that have on the attainment gap?
It's hard to know, because it could be that the thing that's causing them to be absent is the same thing that's causing them to struggle anywhere at school. So the causal relationship between them not being there and their attainment is difficult to pin down. But certainly it's not going to help if you're not in lessons.
To a certain extent, we've been talking mostly about persistent absentees. But one of the things which is quite clear from the figures that we've talked about before is that actually absenteeism has increased across the board. In other words, it is quite likely that far more children are spending a fair bit more time off school. What impact, Emily, does that have on what job teachers have to do?
I think undoubtedly pupil absence is a struggle for schools right across the country. I think it's important to firstly recognise that prior to the pandemic, schools generally were in a pretty good place on absence. So overall absence rates had come down to about 4 or 5%. They then spike considerably and are now at more or less record highs since the data started in 2006. The challenges around absence are occurring at the same time as big challenges that schools are facing elsewhere. So addressing the lost learning that's taken place during the pandemic is a key thing that schools continue to struggle with. So whilst reading outcomes have more or less got back to pre-pandemic norms, that's not the case for maths. It's also happening in a context that's challenging around school funding and also teacher recruitment and retention.
Sam, I was also wondering from the point of view, you quite often hear a parent who says, I'm taking my kids out because for a few days of the holiday and so on, and it's not going to have any impact upon their education. And then you hear teachers say, yeah, well, it may not impact upon their education that much, but it certainly impacts upon the way we teach. Can you explain that?
Well, I think if you're a teacher, you're trying to follow a curriculum over the course of a term. And if you've got kids coming in and out of that class who haven't learnt particular bits of material, especially if it's a very sequenced curriculum in a subject like maths, for instance, they won't be able to do the next bit of the topic until they've done the previous bit. So you're at different levels and different stages trying to do different topics with different groups of kids in your class. That makes your job just a lot harder. And the more that's happening, the more difficult it is to sort of manage your lesson plans.
Emily, can we take a bit more of a look at why it is that kids aren't attending school? What's stopping them?
If you look at the data and compare 2019 to 2022, the single biggest reason we've seen absence levels increase is illness. And winter 2022 was a particularly nasty period for bugs. And that wasn't just COVID. It was also things like seasonal flu and scarlet fever. But looking beyond that, another category we see increasing in the data is unauthorised absences. And actually, there was a trend of rising unauthorised absences even prior to the pandemic. In terms of the actual reasons for that, as opposed to the categories of absence, I think they're complex and there are several of those reasons. The ones that are coming through perhaps most strongly are around increased mental health problems, particularly anxiety, special educational needs, poverty, and also in more general sense of disengagement from education.
Okay. By unauthorised absence, we mean unauthorised by the school. It could be that the parents are perfectly well aware that the child is not attending.
Indeed. So it's only schools who can decide whether an absence is authorised or not. It might well be that the family is supportive of that child being at home. For example, if there are unmet special educational needs, but in a technical sense, it's being recorded by the school as unauthorised.
When we say unmet special educational needs, what kind of thing are we talking about?
I think there are two aspects to this. So there are children who are diagnosed as having special educational needs, but schools might be struggling to make the necessary adjustments or provide a suitable learning environment for those children. There's also children who have not yet had a diagnosis or their needs are not being met. So those children will not formally be able to access special educational needs support. That in and of itself could be a barrier to school attendance. It can also make getting a diagnosis more difficult because they're not in school and that evidence isn't being collated. So that can become a catch-22 situation. And also you can end up in a situation, in some cases we're hearing of relationship breakdowns between parents, schools and local authorities, because parents are in some cases keeping children off school because they feel their needs aren't being met. And that can lead to parents in some cases feeling like they're being judged or penalised by schools or local authorities.
Can we talk about one other aspect of the situation in schools, which I've heard anecdotally, but I want to know whether we can put any kind of figure or any quantity to it, which is about behavioural problems. Mm. People seem to be saying that behavioural problems in schools have become worse since people returned from the pandemic.
So an organisation called TeacherTap ask thousands of teachers every day for their responses to various questions, and they're therefore able to track changes over time. And they have seen an increase in teachers saying behaviour in their class is a real problem for them in different ways. So there's that their last lesson was disrupted and questions like that. Not a massive increase, but definitely an upward tick after many years where behaviour had been improving due to some schools putting a lot of effort into it. And again, I think that could be linked directly to absenteeism, in that if children are struggling with curriculum because they haven't been in class, they're more likely to get disengaged, play up, behave badly. There could be some other factors that are sort of causing both things to happen. You know, this sort of more casual, less engaged attitude towards school overall is sort of causing more disruption, and sort of parent support for teachers in managing behaviour decreasing too. So there's sort of several theories about why that might be happening, but it is a change after quite a long period where behaviour had been improving.
Sam, we've been talking almost entirely about England. Do we know whether the picture is broadly similar in the rest of the UK?
Yes, we don't have the same level of data outside of England, but we do know that persistent absence has increased in Scotland and in Wales as well. And there's no reason to think it wouldn't be broadly in line with what's happened in England.
What's the situation internationally? I mean, we weren't the only country to go through a pandemic, so I imagine other countries have, what, similar experiences?
Yes, as far as we can tell, it's very similar in every sort of developed country that had a lockdown, which covers pretty much every developed country. We have data from the US that's fairly comparable to here, and that shows very similar increases. We have some evidence from European countries like Belgium, which again show sort of similar levels of increase. Countries where we don't have good data, you talk to people there and they say there's the same problem.
Emily, let's go on to what's being done about it already. The problem's been flagged. It's not exactly a totally new one, even if some listeners may have been unaware of it, and I hadn't been aware of the scale of it either. What do we do about our absences?
Absences are an area of government policy where the government has been pretty active, certainly in the last year or so. So in May of this year, the government has announced two initiatives. So one is an expansion of attendance hubs. So these are networks of schools, and the idea here is to share best practice and practical resources. And the other thing the government is doing is around attendance mentors. So these are working with 1,600 odd children who are experiencing the highest levels of absence and trying to work with them and their families to really understand the root causes of what's going on and put in place support to help those children back.
And can we just be clear, we're talking here about England?
That's right, yes.
OK. Sam, if you were sitting opposite the Secretary of State right now and you wanted to give some extra advice on what should be done to tackle the problem, what might you say?
I think what's key to tackling the absence problem is trying to understand the underlying drivers or barriers, because unless you tackle those things, you'll just really be working on the symptom of the problem rather than the cause. Generally, supportive approaches seem to work better than punitive approaches. So things like fines and legal sanctions are less effective. I think the final thing I'd say to the Secretary of State is, given what we know about this very strong and clear link between socioeconomic disadvantage and pupil absenteeism, tackling child poverty has to be part of that wider absence strategy. And I think unless you take account of those wider economic conditions, it will be very difficult to make headway on pupil absence.
Sam, you have advised Secretary of State for yes. Education. What would you advise now?
I think my advice would be to reinvent the wheel, but faster. So, you know, we need to get back to a situation where local authorities have the resources to properly support families in a way that they don't at the moment. And I would also definitely agree with Emily. This is a different Secretary of State. You need to do something on child poverty, which, you know, very sort of deep child poverty is getting a lot worse at the moment. And that's got to be contributing.
Are you saying that the diminutions of services, which were never very popular services in the sense that people don't talk about them the same way they do the NHS, after 2010, left us in a bad position to deal with what then happened in the pandemic in the education system?
Oh, absolutely, yes. The sort of last Labour government had put family support offices into every school, or had a plan to do that. That was all sort of taken away and scrapped.
Sam, if we look forward and let's say we don't get a handle on this, we can't change things for the better, what are the big economic and social impacts of this?
I mean, we can't be sure, of course, but certainly there is that relationship between school absenteeism and future wages and life chances. So we can't put numbers on it, but I think we can be fairly confident that if we don't sort this problem out, it's going to have some pretty negative long-term consequences.
Sam Friedman there with Emily Hunt. My thanks to them and to Katie Bainan and Bramwyn Jeffries. And my conclusion, well, this is something of a slow burn disaster, and much of the remedy lies with services outside of schools themselves. And just before we go, a quick reminder that you can subscribe to the Briefing Room podcast by visiting BBC Sounds, and you'll get access to the entire back catalogue, including the one about the online safety bill, Rishi Sunak's plans for maths, and the one about our ageing world. You've been listening to The Briefing Room with me, David Aronovich. The producers were Kirstine Knight, Sam Huck and Claire Bowes. The editor was Richard Varden, and the programme was mixed by Rod Farker. Another edition of this podcast will be along very soon.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince.
Welcome to this very professional trail for the Infinite Monkey Cage Summer Run.
And this is just going to be information. We will be talking about wasps, bees, supervolcanoes, mushrooms and...
sharks, ancient DNA and are we what we eat?
And we'll be joined by Harry Hill,
Chris Van Tilliken,
Ben Wilbond,
Rachel Paris,
Dr. Nguyen
and Professor Nguyen.
They're very good. The new series of The Infinite Monkey Cage. If you're in the UK, you can hear it all.
Right now on BBC Sounds.
Do you know what? We nearly did a really professional trailer, but then that last bit has spoiled it.
I think we're going to get told off again.
Yeah.
Hello, Greg Jenner here. I'm the host of You're Dead to Me, the BBC comedy show that takes history seriously. Every episode, I pair up a top historian with a fantastic comedian, and we have a lovely, funny, fascinating chat about a different subject from world history. And in this new series, we're beginning with an epic voyage through the story of Homer, the Iliad, and the Odyssey. And that's with Kyle Smith-Bino joining us. And then we'll be learning about Francis Galton and the racist, discredited pseudoscience of eugenics with Desiree Birch. We'll meet many medieval saints in their bone boxes with Rachel Paris. So if that sounds like your sort of thing, listen to You're Dead to Me wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. Bye.